The Skiffy and Fanny Show is listener-supported, which means basically you guys listen and we feel really good about ourselves. But if you'd also like to help us a little bit, you can go to audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty, sign up for a 1-month free trial membership, get a free book, which is pretty cool, and the bonus is that it helps us a little bit. So go ahead and check that out at audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty and enjoy the episode.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 163. This is the second of our Worldcon related stuff. So, just a warning, there is some audio issues. This one happens to have some, like, music in the background, so you can hear, like, trumpets playing, which is kind of interesting. I've tried to cut out as much as I can, but obviously, it's just fairly limited in what I could actually take out. So, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that. The second thing I really wanted to mention was that in episode 159, if I recall correctly, I uttered the phrase, "That's retarded," in a context in which that was extremely just inappropriate and really wrong-headed of me. This was brought up by somebody on Twitter, and I really appreciate that somebody actually called me out on it, and I did want to apologize for using that phrase. It's just unacceptable. I should not have used that phrase, and I do really appreciate when either people who are on the show or people who just listen do bring this stuff up to us, because we try to be good, and occasionally we're just wrong, just way wrong-headed, and I was very wrong in that instance. So thank you to the individual on Twitter who brought this up. Thank you to everyone who listens, and please, if you ever feel like we step over the line like that, don't hesitate to let us know. Send us an email or whatever, and we'll deal with it. So again, I apologize for using that phrase, and I hope everybody enjoys this interview with Tobias Bekel. Thanks. Bye. Today we have Tobias Bekel talking to us at Worldcon for the first time in person. So just a question I kind of asked you already earlier, but how are you so far enjoying Worldcon? It's not your first, but obviously it's a fun experience. So how are you enjoying it so far?
I'm having a lot of fun. I got in Tuesday because I was a guest at a convention in Barbados leading up to this. So I'm a little bit tired, actually, but looking forward to hanging out with everyone. And basically, I took Tuesday and Wednesday very slow, very nice, very easy to sort of give myself some time to catch up on sleep and whatnot before sort of tackling being, you know, on and up and ready for everyone again.
So here's a question. How is, in terms of the experiences between the differences between what goes on and the type of people, how is AnimeCon a totally different experience than Worldcon?
Well, the obvious experience is that, you know, being someone who writes both science fiction and science fiction with a Caribbean background, and down there in Barbados, I have there's just a lot of love for what I'm doing, and a lot of people immediately see the books and get very excited, and so, you know, we sell a lot of books. I meet a lot of my fans. I meet a lot of readers and make a lot of new readers while I'm down there. So for me, it is always just a very epic occurrence with a whole lot of love, and probably the most rock star-like treatment I will ever get in a given year in terms of just people noticing me at random while I'm out and about and, you know, stuff like that. So it's just a very cool experience for me, and humbling to realize that my perfect audience is actually out there, and they're hanging out once a year, all going to a convention in Barbados.
Since you've gone to Barbados, and obviously you've in the last couple of years, you spent a couple different trips to the Caribbean. Do you get the sense that either as a result of you or maybe even someone like Nayla Hopkinson, that there's a a rise or a greater interest in genre-related work within the Caribbean writing community?
The Caribbean writing community has always had a strong interest in genre work. It's just that, you know, historically there's barriers in terms of the ocean and travel and distance being there. So, you know, there are many, many people who are down there who are readers who would tell me stories of, you know, the few times that they had seen a writer that was their favorite writer, you know, passing through for vacation or something like that. And one person, in fact, told me about the time Isaac Asimov came on a cruise ship trip to Barbados, and when everyone found out, they invited him to a few schools, but she actually skipped school to actually go see Asimov talk and sign some books, you know, as he was on vacation on a cruise ship and kind of discovered by the island to be there. So, I mean, there's demand, there's love, there's definitely, you know, lots of people reading, lots of people watching, and very aware of what's going on. It's just that reciprocity is not there as much, you know, because they're not able to come up to events like this as much because it's, you know, it's expensive to go to Worldcon, and particularly when you're flying all the way from Barbados. So there's less connections existing there, but, you know, as the world becomes smaller, as it becomes more global, we're able to maybe make some more of those connections, and that's kind of cool too.
So this is going to be kind of a fun question, since we're at a Worldcon and they're going to be bidding on all kinds of stuff. And what do you think is the likelihood of there ever being a Worldcon in the Caribbean, anywhere in the Caribbean? Because there's just quite a lot of places, except for Cuba. That's probably not likely to happen. But
you know, I would have to say that if the people who are running AnimeCon were ever tasked with you know, running a Worldcon, that would be a really fun con. I mean, it would be something else. It'd be something I'd love to see in my lifetime. One of the things I would love to do is actually get some of the con runners from Barbados to come up to here and integrate and meet some of the con runners up here. I mean, one of the things we're talking about on the internet a lot is Jim Hines just posted that picture of the very undiverse picture of past Worldcon runners. And it'd be wonderful to sort of figure out a way, you know, I'm not exactly rolling in cash, but, you know, to figure out a way, you know, I'm thinking of maybe doing a Kickstarter, or like we have the Transatlantic Fan Fund. And so one of the things I'd really like to do, and if anyone who's listening to this can actually help me with this idea, is I'd like to create a Caribbean Atlantic Fan Fund, to get, some of the people from, the Caribbean to be able to come up to these events and think about the opportunities to sort of bring our science fiction cultures from both regions closer together.
I definitely support something like that.
I would. Kidding. Of course I would.
That's not nice of you. We should actually have something like that. That seems...
I'm honestly surprised that we don't have something like that in existence.
Yes, as far as I can tell, we do not have like a South American or a Caribbean fan fund. We do have one for Australia. We do have one for England or Europe, you know. And so it's actually, you know, I'm not as inside of fandom, and my health has meant that I have really, you know, focused on just my writing and everything over the last 4 years, and making a living. But that is actually one of the few things I actually would like to sort of set up here over the next couple of years, is figure out how maybe we can create some alliances to make that happen, to bring some people from the Caribbean here, or vice versa.
And AnimeCon, it's an annual con, correct?
Mm-hmm. AnimeCon Expo is held in Barbados every year. Sometimes the date changes. This year it's a little later in August. It used to be a little earlier. But it is a convention that any of us, you know, anyone, if you want to go to Barbados, head down there. It's sort of like the Comic-Con of Barbados. And one of the things I'm trying to do is be an ambassador for it, because it is a really good time. Some amazing cosplay if you're into cosplay. This year they had Yaya Han as the guest of honor. If you are into cosplay, you probably know who that is, right?
The new show is on Sci-Fi Channel.
Right now,
so
she is the star of Heroes of Cosplay right now.
Oh, that's right.
It's pretty amazing that it's getting that much attention on, you know, a more national stage.
Yeah.
And I actually have to say this, cut in real quick. So my daughter, I was very proud of her the other day because she said she wanted to go to two conventions in the entire world. So one of them was Comic-Con, obviously. The other was AnimeCon.
Oh, really?
She was like, I have to go. And I'm like, I didn't even know you know it existed. But she's incredibly excited about it because she just recently got into anime in the last year. So.
Ah, so that might be an excuse for us to try to do that next year.
Exactly.
Since maybe...
Come to Barbados.
Oh my God,
it is a fantastic time. You know, it's a great island. And the AnimeCon
sure
Expo is a lot of fun.
Burst into flame.
She's been complaining about the heat here so much.
It's, you know, so what? Hot.
If you can be here in San Antonio, Texas, you could be in Barbados. It is about 10 degrees cooler there and with a constant sea breeze.
It's more the sun that I'm worried about, but I'm worried about that.
You'll be fine.
Place.
We'll lather you up. Don't worry. Yeah, we'll just like
the
basically.
The convention itself is held inside a building with air conditioning. You'll
good.
Be safe. You'll be safe.
Okay, so that'll be really good. So, you know, when people listen to this, and if you do write about it, we'll make sure people know about it and push for this.
Yeah.
Because that would be really good. I mean, at the very least, just to get a conversation happening between the two communities in a way that maybe doesn't happen as it should. And that's probably why so many people, when you say Caribbean science fiction, they go, Nayla Hopkins and Tobias Bickell, that's it.
Right.
It's because there's so little discussion, I guess, between, unless you're in academia and then. We're all talking about all this magical realist stuff, and people are like, I don't know who that is.
Well, actually, Karen Lord, who's another, she's based out of Barbados, and Robert Sandiford, who just wrote a Caribbean superhero sort of novel, is and has work, you know, does work the fantastic into his own work, just gave me a list of stuff that we should be paying attention to as you know, the literature of the fantastic that's coming out of the Caribbean that I will try to be photocopying and putting up in the freebie table here at Worldcon for anyone who's interested.
That's
and
awesome.
I'll probably go ahead and just make a PDF of that quick and put it up on my website for anyone who's interested.
Absolutely, that would be great. That's more stuff for me to read to keep me from doing my PhD work, so... So you'd be helping feed a habit.
I thought that was essentially what your PhD work was on.
A part of it is. only one chapter is on explicitly genre fiction. Although I got some stuff on Broadbird. She writes, I guess, what you'd call magical realism. Or at least sometimes does. Or just stuff that's weird. And it's kind of hard to figure out. Yeah.
And Stephanie Saltier just came out with a new book.
Yes, and it has a U.S. release date next year. It's out in the U.K. right now.
Right, it's out in the U.K. right now. But it,
so you put that on our list?
Well, yes, she's... yes. We actually had her on for a discussion episode. Well, you didn't, because you weren't there, because you're lazy. But yeah, but we did have her on.
Oh, great. That's fantastic.
And we're going to have her on next year, because I guess we should just announce it, because you're awesome, and you deserve to know that. All next year is World SF year for us.
Oh, fantastic.
So we're going to... With some rare exceptions, mostly no Americans.
Okay.
Some Americans, don't worry, guys. We'll have a few. But, like, we're going to try to get as many as humanly possible. So, 70 Saltier is
going
to be on
That's
there.
That's great.
If you decide to release a book, you'll be on there.
Okay.
Which means you have to release a book.
Hurricane Fever comes out in June or July.
Is that the sequel to Arctic Rising or the other
one? Yeah, that's the next. Okay. That's the next book following up on Arctic Rising.
Excellent.
Okay, well then you're on. You're going to be on our list. So even against your will.
And then you'll have to talk to Karen Lord.
Yep. Is she coming up with another one next year?
I don't know what her production schedule is.
Oh my gosh, I don't remember if she said she had another. At the very least, we'll have her on for a discussion episode.
Yeah.
So that'll be really great.
And then you should definitely reach out and talk to Robert Sandiford.
Absolutely.
His latest novels, I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I got into a little piece of it while I was on the plane to fly out. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. Oh, so much good. This is the greatest idea ever, to like have a whole World SF year. There's so much cool stuff to read.
There's a lot of fantastic stuff to read, and it's very easy to sort of not encounter it. Particularly because a lot of people think, like this is something I have to read, it's going to be a slog. Like, you know, if you're looking at the breadth and width of all the different titles, there's always going to be something in there that sets you on fire. And you don't have to like everything, but it's worth, you know, going out and sampling to see if something catches your attention and gets you further in.
Absolutely. And there's stuff in every genre community that people would love.
Totally.
I mean, look at the stuff coming out from India right now. There's
Like, people just think all Indian movies are just like Bollywood films. Everyone just sings and dances all the time. But they've got these high-octane action sci-fi flicks coming out where, like, characters, like, fight giant robots and crazy stuff. Like, every time I see new trailers for these films, I just think they become more and more insanely wild, but they're so inventive and fun.
Right.
And we think it's crazy when something like Pacific Rim comes out and so novel. Like,
right.
You know, like, it's unusual, but...
Novel in a not really sense.
Novel in the sense of the word.
I mean, it borrows. I mean, it deliberately borrows. Like, I think that...
Well, obviously.
Yeah. But
why I say in the American sense of the word, Pacific Rim was novel. They're not common in American cinema.
Sure. Yeah, the kaiju films.
And
it's
done well enough that we should be seeing more.
Exactly.
And hopefully the writer, Travis Beecham, who's really cool, will get more opportunities to sort of play out in there in Hollywood more.
Yeah. I think it made enough money that they at least will let Guillermo del Toro direct something else.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Although it hasn't made enough where they are going to be... Like, when Dark Knight made all that money, they just basically said, yeah, Nolan, here's some money, just do something. All right, and then we got Inception. Del Toro isn't quite at that position. He's done some great films, though. I was just watching Mimic, and I didn't even know that was a Guillermo del Toro movie.
Mimic was a Toro film?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that's really interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, I think he writes...
I can't remember
if he directs.
You still haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth, which I think is, like, a serious gap in your education.
Yes.
No, I absolutely agree.
It's an amazing film.
And every time I tell people this, I have to be in the mood for subtitles. Because I refuse to watch it in, like, dubbed English.
I want to see it in Spanish.
Yeah, they
ruined it.
But I guess I'll just have to do it. Just sit down and watch it.
You gotta do it. There's a reason, though, I haven't watched Precious, for instance. That's an entirely different mood to get into.
Yeah, that's a really sad movie. No, thank you.
Totally unrelated.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so jumping into talking about all these other really awesome, like, Worldcon and the genre community, but obviously you have a new book coming out, which is a sequel to Arctic Rising, which we have talked to you about, so people should go listen to that interview for Arctic Rising and then buy 12,000 copies, because that'll help you. Right. 12,000 copies?
I could live with 10.
10,000? Okay. All right. That's fine. I mean, if you can live with 10, like, that, we'll just half-ass it a little. But everyone should check out Arctic Rising. But tell us a little bit about kind of, I mean, obviously we haven't read it yet, so we don't know exactly what the hell's going to happen yet.
Yeah.
But give us a little sense of where things are going in this new book.
You know, Arctic Rising was set in the melted polar north. And the next novel is the character Rue that was in it gets pulled out into his own book. You're making sweet faces over there.
I am.
That's awesome. It's the story of Rue going back to the Caribbean and continuing his adventures. And so this is going to be sort of like a Caribbean James Bond sort of set of adventures down in the Caribbean.
And to be clear, if they make a movie version, Idris Elba will be playing him.
Dude, I was just telling someone down, I was just being interviewed down in Barbados about this, and they're like, if you had to cast someone for Rue, who would you cast? I'm like, well, we'd have to see if he could do a Caribbean accent, but man, wouldn't it be nice to have Idris Elba? And everyone was just like, yes.
Well, because apparently he has to be in every movie ever made now. I mean, that's like the requirement. I think it's a new law written in Hollywood. Idris Elba will be in every movie.
I've had this general just sort of actor crush on Idris Elba ever since I saw Luther. The TV series.
Everyone says it's great, and
I
need to see it.
Luther's fantastic.
Luther's just fantastic. And of course, he was great in The Wire, you know, which is another fantastic role. But I love it when he gets to use his UK accent.
Like in Pacific Rim.
In Pacific Rim. There's so much screen presence there that.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I was thinking too. When he gets on screen, you're like, well, this guy's a badass.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm still squeeing. Sorry.
Hurricane Fever is all Rue all the time. And
that's going to be great.
People are excited about that so far.
Well, that'll be really great. And obviously last year you released, you did a Kickstarter for The Apocalypse Ocean, which is the next novel in the Xenoworld stuff. And for those who don't know the name of the series, that's Crystal Rain, Ragamuffin, and Sly Mongoose, and now obviously The Apocalypse Ocean. Do you have more plans I imagine you do, but return to this universe?
I do have plans to return to the universe. Right now it is right now everything's in a holding pattern because I'm dealing with all these other contracts. But I do have plans to return to it. There will be a fifth novel. How it's going to come about is actually up in the air, because there's some options that are presenting themselves to me because of the success of the Kickstarter and a renewed interest in the series from all sorts of parties. So I can't really explain what's going to happen, but that series is actually kind of on the verge of being rebooted in an interesting, fun way. I can't give too much away, but there are things happening in the background. Wheels are turning. Parties are interested. Things are being discussed, and it's all very cool. And it's going to be a while, though, before I can really talk about anything, because my big main focus is these young adult novels I just sold to Tor, eventually I have to write the sequel to Hurricane Fever, which is also sold to Tor.
Before we talk about the YA stuff, I want to make sure you give me all of the people who are interested, their numbers and their addresses. I'll have my people talk to them. So
there's still a lot of love out there for the Zettelwald series, and you know, it was everything kind of took a break because I really wanted to see if I could up my sales numbers and do something a little different, you know, because of the flattening of sales, the changes in bookstores. It was a series that wasn't spiraling into a death, but wasn't taking off. We were just kind of holding this thing steady. And I really wanted to grow my career. And so we just had this really honest discussion about, you know, doing the next two books. Tor and I did. I know, like, everyone's laughing and saying, like, oh, yeah, sure, you say it's mutual. But it was actually a really honest mutual discussion where I said, you know, if it's going to stay flat for the next number of books, like, is this really what we want to do? Why not try something different? Why not try to shake things up? And, you know, Arctic Rising really kind of leveled me up in sort of sales and attention. So,
and you also had the Halo books, which obviously gave you a lot of PR in a sense.
Sure, being able to say New York Times bestselling author Tobias Bakel is open source.
Yep, absolutely. And I think the Arctic Rising stuff, what's really interesting about the Arctic Rising stuff, at least we've only read the first one. I keep saying stuff as though we've read the second one, we haven't. But is it, even though they're different novels? I mean, I think we even asked this, Jen and I, like, we asked if secretly they're part of the same universe.
Sure.
I believe we asked that question because they're not the same novels in the sense that they're, like, I'm saying similar but not the same. But, like, there are similar sensibilities. There are a lot of concerns with the technology.
Yeah.
And even the characters. We see a lot of you're returning to, well, not even returning, they're just staying with the same kinds of roots.
Right.
You've always stayed with this global environment where people are interacting. And characters who are obviously Caribbean characters and so on.
You know, that's kind of those are my fascinations. And they bleed over, you know, whether I want them to or not.
But it's good. I think it's good.
We've enjoyed it so far.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So the YA stuff. So you said you have, I mean, you may not be able to say too much, but you've sold some YA books.
I can say, yeah.
So what can you tell us?
Okay, well, Patrick Nilsson Hayden at Tor recently purchased a book called The Island in the Sky and a sequel called Against the Fall of Stars. If you're a big Clark fan, you might recognize the sort of references I'm making in the titles there. But The Island in the Sky is the story of Katie. He's a young St. Thomas boy who gets a chance to win a ticket, basically, to go into outer space on an alien starship that has swung by and offered chances for people to get on board it. It's kind of like a large generation ship, almost. And, you know, my joke was that it's sort of a little bit of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory meets Rendezvous with Rama.
Oh, wow. That's a fun pitch. That should be on the book. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory meets Rendezvous with Rama.
That's good, though, because I mean, YA is one of those areas where science fiction has still been kind of, it's a little bit light, you know, there's not a lot out there.
Sure.
So it's good, it's nice to hear every single time someone was like, oh, I'm writing this YA science fiction, I'm like, oh, finally something I can give my kids.
Right.
Yeah.
And as a parent,
you know, when I try to write books, I try to write things that I just would like to have seen on the shelf.
Right.
When I was in my big book buying phase, you know, when I had a lot more spare time and was younger. And that's kind of like my motivating principle, whether it's for adult or for YA. I'm just trying to, like, write books that fill these positions that are, I feel, underserved and would speak to a certain kind of kid that I was. And, you know, I don't know if that's the smartest or the most, you know, market-oriented way to do it, but I've been very happy with my career so far and feel very lucky to have been able to do what I do, and it looks like things are this luck is continuing, and everyone at Tor seems to be really excited about this book. So,
oh, that's awesome. Well, that's good. Well, I would hope so. They're going to publish it.
Well, yeah,
I'd be really sad if they're like, yeah, we'll publish it, but we're not really excited about it. That would be kind of messed up.
Well, to be honest, I mean, if you talk to enough writers, you know, sometimes a book comes out that is just sort of like, well, you know, we're going to buy it. There's a chance it might go, but, like, we don't know where this is going to go, you know. But in some books you turn in and people are just sort of like, holy crap, this is, like, everyone's excited about it. And you can tell the difference, you know. Yeah. Sometimes you can see, like, it's not that anyone has anything against you. Some books everyone's like, okay, there's some people are excited about it, and but this is a book that seems like every time I turn around, someone else is going like, oh, yeah, everyone's talking about that, you know. And so I'm going like, oh, okay, cool.
That's awesome. So what was the kind of why did you decide to switch to writing YA?
Many, many years ago, I talked about this on my blog, which is that if you read too much, you become very get used to what you're reading. You become a little bit jaded. You start leveling up. You start demanding more. It takes a lot more to shock you or make you feel like you're reading something new. And so I burned out on reading science fiction and fantasy for a while, and this happens. And so what you do is you go looking for another genre. And at the time, my wife was reading Harry Potter. Right about when it first came out, right before it became like this huge thing, she'd just gotten this book that a friend of a friend had said, hey, this is kind of interesting. And I hadn't heard of it at the time. And I picked it up and started reading it and was just like, huh, this is kind of fun. Like, I really love, like, the John D. McDonald books and books written from the 70s and 80s that were, like, you know, 40 to 60,000 words. They got in, they got out. It was like a punch to the side of the head. And they were lean and mean, you know? And I miss that. I really miss that. And one of the cool things about YA was it just really gave me that again. And so I basically went to the YA section, which I hadn't really shopped in a lot, and just walked around and filled up a massive basket full of books, probably 20 or 30 books, and just took them home and started reading, because I was like, man, there's something going on here that really interests me. And 40 to 70,000 word books just really caught my attention.
Yeah, I saw that too. I was like, that's going to go on the audio.
So yeah, the moment I got all these books, I just ripped right through them all in about a month and a half, and went back and got another basket full and just was like, okay, like, this is fun. And so I've been reading and listening to just a ton of YA over the last 5-6 years, and that was when I started doing some work on some preliminary stuff ever since I just randomly ran into it. Of course, now, like, everybody and their mother is kind of, like, moving over to having a YA project, but it's something I've been actually working on for quite a while, and has been, you know, and particularly because when Crystal Rain, my first novel, came out, it was reviewed by several YA outlets and went into some high school bookstores, which was something that caught me off guard at the time. But there was something about my voice, there was something about what I was doing that I actually got a lot of school librarians to kind of grab it. And as the later books came out, there was a little less of a push, and it didn't get picked up by them. But that kind of, like, let me know that it was not a crazy idea for me to think of maybe trying my hand at it. The fact that Crystal Rain did get that kind of attention let me know that I could, maybe that voice, maybe there was something there that was happening. And I do have a fair number of readers who are fairly younger who are interested in the Xenowild series and do send me mail. So it kind of occurred, you know, it's just one of those things that you just keep slowly moving into that direction of saying, like, okay, let's try this and add that to the mix.
And the good thing about if your books ever end up in high school libraries is they'll likely be challenged, which means you'll sell millions of copies. Because the second you said Crystal Rain was put in some high school bookstores and, like, they were considering it for their libraries, and I'm like, that book has a lot of human sacrifice in it, and if they challenge Huck Finn for using the N-word, just imagine how much of a hissy fit.
Here's the crazy thing about the United States, though, is violence is perfectly acceptable to be shown to young people. Parents don't get upset about disembowelment, hearts being ripped out of chests. What gets them upset is, you know, nipple slips, swearing,
yeah,
talking about sex in any sort of honest fashion, or trying to deal with race issues. And that's what's going to get you banned or in trouble. So
if you kill people, you're okay.
If you kill people,
okay.
That's perfectly morally acceptable.
But if you kill people while letting a nipple slip, swearing, and talking about race, fuck.
Yeah.
Well, we're clearly not going to be on any library.
I'm obviously now letting my children read Crystal Rain. Because, but then again, I'm letting them read George R. Martin. So
yeah.
Weird. Yeah.
Don't look at it so accusingly.
I don't know. That's a little.
You look like you want to murder a suitcase.
Right? Poor suitcase.
Yeah.
So when are the books coming out?
We don't know for sure. Tentatively, sometime in early 2015, possibly.
All right, so a couple years, but that's okay because we'll have at least one more book.
There are other books coming out between now and then.
Yeah.
There's a project being shipped around now that's completely written. I've been very busy the last 2 years. There's the Hurricane Fever, and there are possibilities for doing the fifth and final Zenowelth novel fairly soon, as well as the third Arctic Rising novel.
He has been your biggest fan.
He knows. So,
I remember when he first told me about you, and I was like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Great, that's fantastic, awesome. And he would keep raving about you, And I'm like, come on, seriously, stop now. And then he never gave me your books. I was very upset with them.
No, what?
I didn't read anything until Arctic Rising.
Oh, wow.
I had to go back.
I told you to buy the books.
You told me to buy. I was broke.
You don't want
to
give them up.
I'm not going to give them up.
No way.
I have two different sets of all of his books.
And that's what pissed me off. Come on, seriously, you could spare one.
I have the signed Save and Don't Touch set, and I have my Read and I Can Beat It Up and Write It in set.
Luckily, you're actually in my library.
Oh, really?
Good. I think it was Crystal Rain that ended up in my library, okay. Which was shocking because my library sucks. Yeah, no, I was actually very impressed because, it was surprising to see that they had something that was not even common in the bookstores at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's when I finally picked it up. I got to read it, which was good.
Excellent. Okay, so lots of work to be done. And I know recently you've been talking about your blog. Who are you talking to? It's on Twitter, just recently talking about the fact that people were reading your blog, but it wasn't clear that they were reading necessarily for your work.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about, comments and blog readers and everything like that. There's a substantial number of people who read my blog for what I blog about, which is near future, issues about solar, issues about global warming and things of that nature, future technology, augmented reality, all that stuff that just sort of catches my eye and looks shiny. And, a lot of people do write to me and apologize for actually not being, they're not readers, they're not fiction readers, but they are very much fans of my website. So I kind of had this dual readership, dual fandom, whatever you want to call it. Kind of interesting.
So that leads me to the panels that you're doing this weekend.
Yes.
What are they?
The panels I'm doing,
as he looks at his list.
I looked up my list. I've got a signing Friday at 1 o'clock. I'm talking about artificial intelligence.
And that one is the one on Colossus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is talking about a film that I don't think Jen's seen. Have you seen it, Tobias, the Forbin Project?
I read the Forbin Project in paperback.
Ah, okay.
Near Future Energy at 7 o'clock. That's the panel, I hope a lot of people show up for, because it's going to be me, Paolo Bacigalupi, and Ramez Nam, who are all sort of...
With that one.
Yeah, very interested in this sort of stuff, as well as my publisher Tom Doherty, and I think I'm blanking on who the other person is, but he's also a very cool dude. Doing a coffee clutch, I'm talking about the relationship between the reader and the writer, more stuff about the future, Sunday at 11, talking about crowdfunding, which is something I guess I'm a de facto expert on, Sunday at 1 o'clock. I'm supposed to have had a reading, but it's actually being held while I'm on my flight back to Ohio.
Oh,
so.
Lovely. I've heard of quite a few of those happening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, this is not the fault of the organizing committee. I originally said I was going to be leaving Monday afternoon.
Right.
Although, when I said I was leaving Monday afternoon, giving me a reading then Monday at, almost afternoon is not as helpful. But I'm leaving Monday afternoon. They actually did slot me in with a reading time, with enough time. So, it's not that, on my case, other people have had legitimate concerns. But in my case, actually, they did totally right by me. But the people who were flying me down to Barbados and back got to choose when my flight times were. And I don't want to be an ungracious guest. So they actually have me flying out of here Monday morning early so that I can land in Ohio at a decent time so that my wife can pick me up and whatnot. So
see your family finally.
And see my family after 2 weeks.
Right?
Yeah, I've been on the road for 2 weeks.
Yeah, those twins are going to have so many plans for you.
Yes, they are.
They're
They'll
twins.
Probably kick me in the shin. Where the heck have you been, Daddy? So,
well, mine aren't even twins, and they do that.
Yeah.
No. Well, at this point, they're talking, running around, getting in trouble, twins.
Yes, they are.
Yeah,
they're definitely talking, running around, getting in trouble, twins.
And just one last, I think, because we're about a half hour, and I don't want to take all of your
night,
but just on that very note, since you recently became a father,
yes,
and obviously you have twins, which is awesome. But how, in what way has being a father maybe changed your approach to writing or the way you see writing? Has it changed anything for you?
Well, I'm a little bit more empathetic than I used to be. You know, going through the process of having kids gives you a larger heart, you know, if it's all done right, I think.
Does that make you less willing to kill your characters?
No, but what it does is it makes me a lot more aware of the manipulations I'm doing to make people feel a little bit more when I'm writing. I'm a little bit more aware of, you know, it's less about me and what's shiny, and I do actually now think a little bit more about how this impacts the reader, which actually makes me a little bit more malevolent than I used to be, because now I actually just think, oh, here's a scene that would, like, make people feel really horrible. You know, like, I could definitely yank on this a little bit and add some more pathos to the scene, you know? Yeah, because I've got a little bit more empathy now in me that I can actually feel a little bit more about how to move forward with some scenes like that. So
instead of feeling bad, you just channel it towards really yanking at us.
Yeah, no, it's just another tool in the box, because I you know, now when I look at a video of, like, you know, some kids that are starving in another country or things like that, when I was younger, I would just go, like, well, that sucks, you know, move on. And now I look at it and I go, you know, start getting that little moisture in that corner of the eye and go, like, that could be my kid, you know.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're able to just put yourself in other positions a lot more because you're practicing doing it a lot more because you're a parent.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know, that allows me to put myself in even more other people's positions, not just other parents or other kids. I'm able to do that swap a little bit more because I've been, you know, doing it a lot more over the last 4 years. I've been forced myself to think a little bit more openly about stuff like that. So that definitely carries over my work a little bit more.
Awesome. Alrighty. So as I said, we're about a half hour, so I think that's fair enough. I don't want to take all your wonderful day. But just really quick, I mean, people I think will know, but where can people find you?
Hey, I'm at www.tobiasbuckel.com, and I usually am hanging out on Twitter at Tobias Buckel. So
yep.
You can find all sorts of free stuff on my website, samples, see if you like the work, you can keep on reading. And I keep a blog there, obviously, like we discussed, about near future technology and space access and transportation and whatever catches my eye.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking a little bit of time out of your Worldcon to talk with us.
Sure.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.